From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.
Americans, I'm American. I worked on Apache helicopter.
The voice of American captive Paul Johnson Jr. in a video released on Tuesday by a Saudi terrorist group. Tonight, Paul Johnson is dead. His captors gave a 72-hour deadline for the Saudi government to release militant prisoners. The Saudis refused. Johnson's captors released a statement threatening to treat him like the U.S. military treated Iraqi prisoners at Abu Ghraib. It was worse than that. Earlier today, chilling photos of Paul Johnson's beheaded body were posted on the Internet. Hours later, the body was found in northern Riyadh, the Saudi capital, and the terrorist leader Abdel Aziz al-Mukrin, believed to be responsible for Johnson's death, was reportedly killed in a Riyadh firefight. Adel al-Jubeir, a foreign policy advisor to Saudi Crown Prince Abdullah, the kingdom's de facto ruler, condemned Johnson's killing today at the Saudi embassy in Washington.
His brutal murder illustrates the cruelty and inhumanity of the enemy we all are fighting. On behalf of my country and every individual with a sense of decency and humanity, I offer our most heartfelt condolences to his family and friends.
And President Bush had these words when he spoke with reporters in Seattle.
America will not be intimidated by these kinds of extremist thugs. May God bless Paul Johnson.
Throughout the week, family and friends of Paul Johnson Jr. in New Jersey, near his hometown, held vigils for his safe release. But that was not to be. Tonight on Point, the murder of Paul Johnson Jr. and its implications for the Saudi kingdom, the region, and the United States. We begin tonight in Eagleswood Township, New Jersey, east of Philadelphia, where Paul Johnson Jr.'s hometown community is reacting to the news of his death. Jennifer Morose, a reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer, has been on the scene talking with friends and family. She joins me now. Good evening and welcome, Jennifer Morose.
Hi, Tom.
Thanks for joining us, Jennifer. There was a heartfelt prayer, vigil, and sort of unending attention to the fate of Paul Johnson before his death. Now it's happened. What's the response been there?
Well, obviously, there's a lot of sadness here. It's a small town. We're talking 1,000 to 1,500 people. So whether people knew Paul Johnson directly or knew of him, people have been tuning into their TVs for the last 3 days. There's hardly anyone who hasn't been. So it's a mixture of sadness, anger, disgust, I would say shock. But to be honest, the most people that I've spoken with were kind of expecting this.
Tell us about Paul Johnson's family. We've heard this week from his son, from his second wife, a Thai woman. His first wife or previous wife is still there in New Jersey. I'm reading that the family is under the care of Lockheed Martin, his employer. Is that right?
I can't confirm that. I can tell you that the family has, for the most part, holed up and away from the media. There are throngs of live trucks here that have basically descended on this little town and the neighboring towns where a lot of family of Paul Johnson lives. I did get an opportunity to speak to his brother, who lives in Manahawkin, which is just up the road basically from where the kids grew up. And his reaction was, he thought it was the inevitable. Yeah, he told me that even had prisoners been released, he thought his brother would have been killed. But the way in which it was done just brought a wave of disgust. He was angry and obviously saddened. A cousin who I also spoke to said that she thought maybe if they had released prisoners, they might have Paul back by now. So you're getting various reactions, but a lot of them involve anger and sadness.
The family kept trying. They kept fighting. It was just yesterday on NBC's Today show that Paul Johnson III, Paul Johnson Jr.'s son, was pleading with the U.S. and Saudi governments to help his father. Let's listen.
I just want to ask the President of the United States and the Saudi officials for Father's Day is right here. Bring my father home for Father's Day.
It did not happen. Jennifer, Paul Johnson Jr. had spent most of a decade in Saudi Arabia as an engineer working on the Apache attack helicopter for a considerable portion of that time for Lockheed Martin. So New Jersey had not been his home for a long time.
No, it hadn't. And in fact, he left New Jersey much earlier than that. He's been gone from here for all intents and purposes for, you know, more than two decades. But he's still considered the hometown boy. There are a lot of family connections here. His maternal grandfather ran the local barbershop, and his family is known here. Like I said, it's a small town and a small community. And so they still view this as sort of a personal affront.
Jennifer Moreau, stand by for just a moment. I want to welcome into our conversation Captain Daniel Schaefer. He's chaplain for the Stafford Township Police Department. He spoke at last night's prayer vigil for Paul Johnson, Jr. Good evening and welcome, Captain Schaefer. Daniel Schaefer, are you there? Sounds like we don't have him quite yet at the moment. Jennifer, were you at the vigils, the prayer vigils, over the last day or two?
I was not. A colleague of mine attended last night. You've seen the same sort of prayers, offered in a less informal setting for the last 3 days. People have literally been, sitting on the edge of their seat. You've got yellow ribbons posted all up and down the main road, which is Route 9 down here, with signs saying our prayers are with the Johnson family. Today there was a church that had opened its doors not knowing yet that Paul Johnson, had died, and the 12 to 7 opening for prayers in hopes for his safe return turned into, opening the church's doors for, prayer for comfort for the family. So everyone here pretty much has had him on their minds, and last night's vigil was pretty much a coming together of the community to pray together.
I think we've got Daniel Schaefer now. Captain Schaefer, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Tom.
Thanks for joining us. You spoke last night at the prayer vigil for Paul Johnson, Jr., and today this terrible news. How are you and your neighbors, townspeople, taking this?
Well, to be honest with you, we're just beginning to process the tremendous shock. We had the vigil and we prayed and we believed that things would turn out better, but it was almost like some folks said, we were hoping against hope. There wasn't much progress being made, but primarily there was a lot of support there for the community, and of course a lot of prayers for Paul that God would sustain him, through this horrible time that he's been through.
Daniel Schaefer, do you have the sense that the United States government, that the Saudi government, did enough? Clearly, it wasn't enough to save Paul Johnson, but do you have the sense that there was sufficient effort put into the effort to save him?
I wish I had an answer for that. I really don't know if any of us can really make any conclusions on that. I know that this is a passion for our president, and I really feel badly for him having to deal with these issues, because this whole thing is so covert. There's probably a lot we don't know, and to assume isn't going to really give us any satisfaction.
And how are you beginning to take on board what this means in terms of the United States' presence in the Middle East, Daniel Schaefer? The president said today, we will not retreat, but the U.S. Embassy is advising people to leave, and you can only imagine what other employees and workers in Saudi Arabia are thinking tonight.
Well, to me, this the kidnapping and murder of Paul is just a weekly reminder, a fresh reminder of 9/11. And that's that. This started way back then. In fact, as I have mentioned to others before, this is way back into the biblical time. This is basically the start of the religious war, and it's now come to America, and we in America now, we have that I guess you'd call it that 1,000-yard stare that we used to see in Europe and other war-torn countries, and people just look amiss of what's happening. What are we going to do? And it's just it's heartbreaking that there aren't any real answers. I wish we had answers, and You know, even last night there were individuals there showing their respect to who lost loved ones at the World Trade Center. And it's just an extension. And we just wonder, you know, how long is this going to go on before something really is done that's effective? We don't really know. I wish we had some answers.
Well, a tough night there in New Jersey. Captain Daniel Schaefer, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks, Tom.
And Jennifer Morose, what are the ongoing or onward plans? Are there even plans yet for observing Paul Johnson's death there?
I haven't heard of any new vigils other than, you know, the local church here. I'm told the only church in town opening its doors for prayer. But the family, I know part of the family is holed up in Galloway Township, which is not too far from here. It's one county over. And they're supposed to be issuing a statement very shortly. And they were just preparing for that lately, whether that will give any indication as to any future, you know, events, I'm not sure.
Jennifer Morose, good luck with your reporting there, and thanks for joining us tonight from Eagleswood Township in New Jersey, east of Philadelphia. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Jennifer Morose, staff writer in the South Jersey Bureau of the Philadelphia Inquirer. I'm joined in the studio tonight by Jessica Stern. She's a lecturer at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government and author of Terror in the Name of God, Why Religious Militants Kill. We will be hearing just in a few minutes from Saudi Arabia. But before we turn there, Jessica, your thoughts as you've watched all this unfold over the last week. This is not the first killing of foreigners in Saudi Arabia in the last month, a couple of dozen. Not even in the last week there have been others. But this kind of very high-profile, spotlights on, beheading, body found, the images that are coming out on the Internet, terrible. And now we hear from New Jersey, from Captain Schaefer, well, this is part of the religious war going back centuries. You can see the kinds of buttons this presses, Jessica Stern.
Yes, I think we need to understand this as a civil war within the Islamic world. I think that there's a great deal of frustration within Saudi Arabia, the sense that the royal family is insufficiently Islamic. You can see members of the royal family out drinking and carousing. I've seen them myself in Lebanon. That is very frustrating to Islamists living in Saudi Arabia. And of course, there's tremendous frustration with what's going on with the economy. The economy has really taken a nosedive. There was a kind of compact that the Saudi people, and in particular Saudi youth, feel that they had with the royal family, and the royal family is not delivering. And in particular, the royal family is seen as very close to the United States. And I think that we need to see this brutal murder as partly an attack on the royal family. I don't think that it is evidence of a clash of civilizations so much as evidence of a clash within civilizations.
So the word, in part, in the statements coming out this week was, from Paul Johnson's captors, we want to drive the infidels out of the Holy Land. You're saying that's only a piece of this. It's more about what's going on inside Saudi Arabia. How serious a shake to the pillars of the Saudi monarchy are we witnessing over these last weeks?
Well, we keep seeing these shakes, and it's hard to know what the end point will be. But certainly the shakes are getting in some ways worse and worse. I mean, this is a horrific crime that is we all feel in quite a visceral way. In some ways, there's something more distressing about the beheading of someone and the showing of that beheading on the internet than killing of larger numbers of people. It shows such a lack of humanity and a kind of glee in horror, a horrible, brutal crime. It's obviously they're really cruising for a bruising. this group.
And it looks like some may already have received that, with deaths reported tonight among the captors. We're talking tonight about the execution of Paul Johnson Jr. today in Saudi Arabia and its implications for the Saudi kingdom, the region, the United States. I'm joined in the studio by Jessica Stern, author of Terror in the Name of God. You can join us as well. What do you see as the message this time of another American murdered in captivity in the Middle East? We're at 1-800-423-8255. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking tonight about the execution of Paul Johnson Jr. today in Saudi Arabia and its implications for the Saudi kingdom, the region, and the United States. You can join the conversation tonight. What is the meaning of the death of Paul Johnson Jr.? Is there meaning, or is this just, in Colin Powell's word, barbarism? Could more have been done to save Paul Johnson? And who benefits from this American's very public death? What interests are advanced? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I want to turn now to Saudi Arabia, where 15,000 Saudi officers reportedly searched more than 1,000 homes in Riyadh in an effort to avert the killing of Paul Johnson. Khaled Al-Mayana is editor-in-chief for the Arab News, the largest English-language daily newspaper in the Middle East. He was in Riyadh earlier today and spoke with me later in Jeddah. I asked him to describe the range of reactions to Paul Johnson Jr.'s killing in Saudi Arabia.
It's one of anguish. It's one of horror. In fact, people were hoping and praying that these murderers might change their minds. But when it happened, it really struck deep in our hearts. A lot of people cried. I had one man phone me and tell me he knew the late Paul Johnson, who was a diver like himself. There were people who called us from Riyadh. And I think there's a resolve now to really go after these people and hunt them down.
Khaled Al-Mayna, what thoughts, what fears does this killing stir in you? Where does this take Saudi Arabia?
Well, it takes us into a very unknown phase of our history. It makes me sad also, because this is a country where there are practically no crime, and suddenly to have political crime and political murder and killing of innocent people, for whatever reason, we are groping at the moment, and people are asking, why is it happening? When you don't have bank robberies and you don't kill people in the streets, we answer ourselves, these people are cutthroats, murderers and thugs outside the pale of any law, not answerable to anyone, having no ideology. And I think that's the answer that the Saudis are giving themselves.
But you know what the killers said. They said Paul Johnson Jr. was killed because he worked on Apache helicopters, and Apache helicopters killed Muslims in Palestine and Afghanistan. Do Saudis reject that reasoning?
Well, the majority of Saudis reject that reason. I mean, Johnson was a guest in this country. He was working with the Saudi authorities, with the government. He had nothing to do with others. To kill innocent people, I think the only word that can describe this act is pure evil and murder. There's nothing else.
We read that 15,000 Saudi officers searched more than 1,200 homes in Riyadh to try and find Paul Johnson and avert the killing. Do you have a sense of whether they even came close to finding him?
You can never know, as you know, it happens in kidnapping cases where somebody could be right in the midst of the neighborhood and the police would just pass by and overlook. Yesterday, helicopters were hovering about several neighborhoods. Police checkpoints, car trunks were being opened. I was also personally asked to identify myself and show my ID card. Strict security in Riyadh, unfortunately, didn't help.
President Bush said Americans will never retreat from the world. But what do you think? There have been many attacks now on foreigners in Saudi Arabia, including on Americans, and deaths. Do you anticipate that American expatriates working in Saudi Arabia will begin or continue to flee? Will Saudi Arabia empty of Americans?
I don't think so. There are quite a few Americans left. Some people are leaving. Well, this has happened during the period of the summer vacations, so a lot of them have gone out with their families. I don't think so. They should flee. They are here. As yesterday, somebody wrote to us, an article, the Saudi businessman, said, "We will protect you with our lives." But it's easier to say that. But I think precautionary measures, preventive measures should be implemented. At the same time, I think we should not give in. Both the Americans and the Saudis, and especially the public, should unite together and try to get to the bottom of this. And I think this is really going to change things, both on a public level and at a personal level.
And your message tonight to the Johnson family, to Americans watching?
You will not believe it that last night my wife and my daughter prayed, and as many Saudis did, and I'm telling you this from the bottom of my heart, we all, till the last moment, really hoped against hope that Mr. Johnson, God bless his soul, and may these perpetrators be cursed forever, would have been saved.
Khalid Al-Maina, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Khalid Al-Maina is editor-in-chief of the Arab News newspaper. He spoke with me from Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. You can join our conversation tonight, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined in the studio by Jessica Stern, lecturer at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government and author of Terror in the Name of God, Why Religious Militants Kill. And now, from Marco Island, Florida, by John Esposito. He's professor and director of the Center for Muslim-Christian Understanding at Georgetown University and author of Unholy War, Terror in the Name of Islam. Good evening and welcome, John Esposito.
Good evening.
John, you just heard Khalid Al-Maina there in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, saying that Saudis felt anguish and horror at what they saw today in the murder, the beheading of Paul Johnson Jr. But let me read you a couple of other comments from parts of Saudi Arabia, not perhaps as well-heeled as Mr. Al-Maina is. Here from the Associated Press, their reporters went out to fundamentalist districts in Riyadh and talked to Saudis there before the killing. They quote a man here named Mukhlas Nawaf, as he was having dinner at a restaurant called Jihad. And he said, how can we inform on our brothers when we see all these pictures coming out of Abu Ghraib and Rafah? He said, this is not a little skirmish, it's a war. They spoke with another man, again, in the fundamentalist section of Riyadh, at a shopping center, who said, these kidnappers are holy warriors, heroes who never waver. All Saudis hate Americans, not only these heroes. John Esposito, what's going on here?
Well, I think it's a very good question. I think that what it points up, I was listening also to Jessica's, I think, very incisive comments. What it points up is that there is diversity within Saudi Arabia, just as there is diversity within America. If you go to so-called fundamentalist districts, you will get exactly that response. If you go to other areas of Saudi Arabia, you will get the kinds of comments that you heard from Khalid. If you talk to the members of the royal family, you will get comments coming from the royal family. So I think that diversity is important. I think that where there is a thread here is that what one does see is that the motivation of this kind of group and the way in which they attempt to legitimate what they do is, in fact, as Osama bin Laden did, to play to populist causes, and in this case, to play to the failures of the Bush administration in Iraq, as epitomized by Abu Ghraib, but other things, as well as in Israel and Palestine. But their goal is not simply to, as Jessica said, not simply to take the United States down. It's to overthrow the House of Saud. And one of the ways to do that, to contribute to it, of course, is to drive foreigners out, Americans but also others, out of Saudi Arabia, because the Saudis are very dependent on foreign human resources.
35,000 Americans in Saudi Arabia. I don't know the exact number at this moment this evening. The U.S. Embassy advising that if people can go, perhaps they ought to go. What's your sense, John Esposito? Have we seen enough death, 20-some in the last month, foreigners killed in Saudi Arabia, three just in the last week, and now this grisly beheading? Is this enough to spark an exodus of Americans from Saudi Arabia?
It's always hard to predict, but I think that, it's very interesting, for example, if you see, the current atrocity that we're looking at. I mean, this is somebody who's lived in the kingdom for 10 years, who chose not to leave even after some of the previous situations that we've seen in Saudi Arabia, not just the terrorist attacks, but the attacks against Americans. So there are Americans and foreigners who have kind of a long-standing relationship with Saudi Arabia, who aren't simply there, to make money quickly and leave. But it seems to me that if the terrorists are able to continue this kind of assault and this kind of momentum, I mean, clearly it's going to increase the number of people who will leave the kingdom.
Let's listen for just a moment to what President Bush had to say earlier today in Seattle about the terrorist killing of Paul Johnson Jr. and its impact on Americans.
See, they're trying to intimidate America. They're trying to shake our will. They're trying to get us to retreat from the world. America will not retreat.
Jessica Stern, I know you see the first conflict here as an internal conflict, and yet the United States is in the Middle East in great numbers, in great force right now, militarily. It has huge interests there. There is also the thread of conflict between this terrorist group and the United States. President Bush says America will not retreat. Is that guaranteed? Does oil guarantee that the U.S. won't retreat? Do other interests guarantee the U.S. won't retreat?
Well, I'm not sure I'm prepared to say what it means about the likelihood that we'll retreat. But I do think that to the extent this is about a war against us, I think it's important to realize that we are playing into the hands of the terrorists. And Abu Ghraib is just the latest example of that. Those terrorists are determined to prove to potential recruits that we are out to destroy the Islamic world, that we are out to humiliate them. And the fact is that the global war on terrorism is failing. Since 9/11, the 2 years after 9/11, the number of terrorist incidents nearly doubled from the 2 years prior. The number of incidents that were carried out by groups that claim to be promoting Islam more than quadrupled. This is according to data compiled by RAND. And the lethality of those incidents went up from 0.65 to an average of one death per incident. So we're doing really, really badly here. And I think one of the reasons we're doing really badly is because of that badly conceived and implemented war in Iraq, and also because of our continuing support for Sharon, which I think is a major foreign policy mistake.
The Israeli Prime Minister. Mm.
Yes.
Don Esposito, yes.
Underscore what Jessica said. I mean, it seems to me that, you know, on the one hand, I would tend to argue that in the early days after 9/11, the Saudi government seemed to, on the one hand, want to respond, but in many ways was accused of being in denial, not really taking a cold look at what the realities were, what it didn't see, how it was blindsided, what its failures were. Regrettably, at times, the Bush administration seems to take that same position. We have, you know, most recently, the vice president almost every day this week stepping out front and denying that there is an issue with regard to the claims that were made with regard to weapons of mass destruction or the significant relationship of Saddam to al-Qaeda. And there's a continued denial to realize that the rather uncritical approach of the Bush administration with regard to Mr. Sharon, not with regard to support for Israel's right to security, existence, security and stability, but with regard to Sharon and some of his policies. The failure of the administration to look at its own problems and failures and simply want to engage, as regrettably the president just did in the statement that he made that was short on substance and long on simply saying they're bad, we're good, we're not going to retreat. I think that doesn't help the situation. What we fail to see is that, as Jessica said, the global war is failing, and another index of it is the fact that anti-Americanism has grown not only in the Muslim world, but in the non-Muslim world.
But let me ask you this. Is there a point at which this kind of gruesome killing provokes widespread revulsion in the Islamic community? We heard it in the voice of Khalid Mayana. Now, he's an American-educated Saudi, but what about more broadly? I mean, the photographs on the Internet today, you know, a beheaded body with a severed head placed in the small of its back, a knife leaning against the forehead. This is about as gruesome as it gets. Is there a point, John Esposito, at which Muslims say, wait a minute, this is just wrong. We can't go down this road. Or is this whipping up a whirlwind of more support somehow in a frenzy even?
I think that one, again, has to realize that if you're talking about 1.3 billion Muslims, just as one, you know, get upset when I watch extremist Muslims generalize about America and basically think that all Americans should be equated with the statements of particular members of any
very fair. Let's look at the margin then, what that might be impacted by
On the margin, I think that, you know, regrettably, that on the margin you have an alienation and a hatred of America that will not be turned off by this. With regard to the majority of Muslims, whether they're in the Muslim world or they're in Europe and America, they are clearly, there's a revulsion at what this has done. And clearly what has happened, even within the kingdom, when you look at the, as the Saudis themselves began to experience the level of terror within the kingdom itself. It made them even more sensitive and responsive, and brought about an even graver sort of revulsion to what was going on. And clearly, this kind of action is barbaric, not just by, quote, Western standards, but it's barbaric by Muslim standards.
Let's invite our callers in. Jack is calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Jack. You're on the air.
Hi. Yes, I think that Robert Baer's thesis that the Saudi kingdom is on the verge of collapse might have some credence, and I was wondering how your panelists felt.
Robert Baer, the former CIA Mideast chief, you're saying you feel that they're wobbling and this is more evidence or this is further attack?
I sense that this is falling through our fingers and that we're going to have to become involved militarily in that country, in Saudi.
Let us pick that up, Jack, and thanks for your call. John Esposito, how much wobble in the Saudi monarchy? They have tried to mount a big response to the growing terror there. They've officially picked up 400 or 500 militants. These, of course, the ones that the captors of Paul Johnson wanted released. News reports say there may be 600 or 700 that they have arrested and imprisoned. How serious is the threat to the monarchy? Is the U.S. going to have to get more involved because of the oil interest, if nothing else?
I think that there's no doubt about the fact. I mean, it's an obvious statement to say that this is a serious threat. And I think the extent to which we've seen the escalation of, again, acts of terror within a kingdom and within areas that were normally seen as secure, not just outlying areas, but areas like Riyadh and Jeddah. On the other hand, I think it's important to see that one does see the Saudis moving in recent times, a very far more rapid pace in addressing the issue. And I think that the extent to which they are really pouring resources in, the extent to which we had a report tonight that the leader of this particular Al-Qaeda branch or group was supposedly, found and killed, et cetera,
yes,
indicates the extent to which the Saudis now fully realize the problem and are going to pump the resources in. I think we ought to be very slow about talking about U.S. Direct intervention in Saudi Arabia or any other country in the region right now.
It only comes up, I guess, because if this is indeed a threat to the monarchy, on the other side of that lies an awfully big question mark.
I think it does, but I think the United States has to go really slow. We have enough on our plate right now in terms of the region, and the last thing we want to play into is the idea that the U.S. is this sort of new colonial power, this is the American century, and we, simply will go in wherever it is. I think there are a lot of ways in which we can be supportive of the Saudi government, as well as while being supportive of their movement against terrorists, also supporting their movement towards broader political participation and the other kinds of reforms that will also be necessary in the kingdom.
John Esposito, Jessica Stern, please stand by. We're talking about the execution today of Paul Johnson Jr. What do you see as the message this time of another American murdered in captivity in the Middle East? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the execution of Paul Johnson Jr. today in Saudi Arabia and its implications for the Saudi kingdom, the region, and the United States. My guest tonight, Jessica Stern, lecturer at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government, author of Terror in the Name of God, and John Esposito, director of the Center for Muslim-Christian Understanding at Georgetown University and author of Unholy War. You can join the conversation as well. What is at risk in the drumbeat of deaths in Saudi Arabia? The Saudi status quo, the monarchy, world oil production, U.S.-Saudi relations, and what does today's gruesome killing say about the direction of the war on terrorism, about U.S. policy in the Middle East? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Many appeals for Paul Johnson's life to be spared this week. They were not successful, but not for lack of emotion, not for lack of trying. Here was his second wife, Tanam Johnson, in an interview with the Arabic satellite channel Al Arabiya earlier this week.
What can I do for him? I can do. Please, I want to see him come back to see me. He don't do anything wrong. He nice with the people. I never see him have problem in the 10 years in here. Never.
And tonight, Paul Johnson is dead. You can join us, 1-800-423-8255. We're joined right now from Washington by Josh Meyer. He covers terrorism for the Los Angeles Times. Josh Meyer, thanks for joining us. Josh Meyer, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear. Josh, what's the reaction in Washington tonight to Paul Johnson's killing? We've seen the big formal reaction, the condemnations from President Bush, Vice President Cheney, Colin Powell. Everybody's saying this is evil, this is barbarism. But behind that, what kind of thoughts is this provoking in Washington in the intelligence and defense communities?
Well, I think there's a lot of hand-wringing going on here. I mean, the events in Saudi Arabia over the last year at least have been sort of escalating, starting with the May 12th bombings last year in which about 34 people were killed. But I think this is a case where just the sort of barbaric nature of the killing and, you know, the appeals from his wife and so on, just seems to be more brutal than the rest. It's almost like the straw that broke the camel's back. I think that there's a lot of outrage here at the al-Qaeda cells in Saudi Arabia. I certainly know that the Saudi authorities have gotten religion and are really trying to crack down on these guys.
But straw breaking the camel's back, what does that mean? There have already been efforts underway to try and go after al-Qaeda in Saudi Arabia. Is there some new level of effort that could be mounted here by the U.S., by Saudis, U.S. pressure on Saudi Arabia? What?
Well, I don't think the U.S. officials think that they need to put any more pressure on the Saudi government. I think that the Saudi government concedes that it's now in a death struggle with al-Qaeda, that they're going after the royal family and the power structure there and the oil business and the economy, and they're trying to drive out as many Americans as they can to achieve that end. But I think that, you know, talking to some of the Saudi officials here today, you get the sense that, you know, that you're right. I mean, there have been outrages in the past, but they just clearly seem today at wit's end as to what to do about this, and I'm not sure what's going to happen next. I do know that as many as 15,000 Saudi authorities were actually going door-to-door to help try to find this guy before he was executed.
And, Josh, there has been the sense for a long time that the Saudis, as John Esposito said earlier, were giving kind of lip service to going after terrorists and supporters of terrorists, that some of that support might go so high in Saudi society that they were incapable of really going after it. Is Washington confident now that, you know, all the doors are going to be opened here, all the covers will be pulled back, that they'll do everything they can do to address this threat?
Well, I don't think they are. I mean, in fact, the Council on Foreign Relations, a very well-respected think tank, just released a report earlier this week, you know, that indicated that the Saudi government, you know, pays a lot of lip service to this, but they have not really gone after any of the top financiers of al-Qaeda. And many of those people are very well-known billionaires living in Saudi Arabia. Some of them have been identified by the U.S. government as top financiers of al-Qaeda going all the way back to its origins, and these guys have never even been really questioned or detained and held accountable for what they're doing. So there's always a lot of skepticism, but they do say that they're seeing a lot of progress on that end and a lot more cooperation by the Saudis.
Is there more cooperation that the United States could mount with Saudi Arabia? Has there been, you know, is there more that could be done, or Saudi Arabia doesn't want it, or the U.S. is afraid to get more involved there?
Well, they've said that the Saudis have always said that that they're willing to cooperate, and 6 months later, you know, you'll find out that the U.S. government didn't believe them, even though the government had said 6 months earlier that they did. So it's kind of hard to see what's going on. I've been to Saudi Arabia a few times in the last year or so, and you can see a change now in terms of the Saudis have let the FBI and the CIA sort of work with them on the ground, you know, hip to hip, I guess, with their agents. Before, they kept saying that they would just take care of it from their end, and they literally would not even let many U.S. authorities into the kingdom to work on investigations. Now they're doing that, so I think the authorities think that that's a huge step in the right direction.
Well, if this is a death struggle with al-Qaeda, it's going to be fascinating to see how the Saudi royal family deals with that, the openness that that might require, the examination of their own high ranks of Saudi society. Josh Meyer, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
You're welcome.
Josh Meyer covers terrorism for the Los Angeles Times. I want to turn to our callers. They've been patiently waiting. Benjamin's calling from Boston. Hi, Benjamin. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
The point I'm trying to make is this policy of not negotiating with terrorists, I think it's a failed policy. Under normal circumstances, nobody wants to negotiate with terrorists. But when the life of an American is in jeopardy, especially in the manner that this fellow young man, gentleman was killed. I think it makes a lot of sense to do whatever it takes to save this man's life.
But Benjamin, let me ask you, you know, what the captors wanted was for apparently hundreds of militants that have been painstakingly rounded up by Saudi police over the last year to be released from Saudi prisons. Do you think that should have happened?
Well, you cannot put any price tag on someone's life. If you want us to release those people, we know who they are. You release them tomorrow, go and recapture them.
So you're saying do what it takes to get the American out. Benjamin, thanks for calling. Jessica Stern, do you believe that these captors would have released Paul Johnson under any circumstances? Is the image, as in its full grisliness of the beheading, in fact, exactly what they wanted?
I think it very likely is exactly what they wanted. I mean, terrorists do become professionals, and the things they claim to want are not going to satisfy them. And we can see that bin Laden, of course, was claiming that the reason he was going after Americans was to force U.S. troops out of Saudi Arabia. Well, U.S. troops are leaving Saudi Arabia. When it comes to a hostage, it's hard to know how they would respond if those al-Qaeda operatives had been released. But, of course, that couldn't be done. I think that the caller is right that it may make sense through intermediaries to try to talk to terrorists. I think that is correct. But the idea of actually giving in to their demands, I think that's probably setting a bad precedent and also unlikely to be effective.
And John Esposito, let me ask you, there were explicit statements made by the captors. Though, as Jessica Stern says, these people become professional even at using the media and statements. But they said, first of Paul Johnson, they said, let him taste something of what Muslims have long tasted from Apache helicopter fire and missiles. They also said they would treat him as American soldiers treated Iraqi prisoners at Abu Ghraib. It turned out, as we noted, worse than that. But will this resonate in some way as just in how wide a segment of the Islamic community in Saudi Arabia and globally?
That's a good question. Let me begin by saying that I agree with what Jessica just said, and I think it's an important point. I think we need to keep in mind that that extremists and terrorists, these professionals, they believe in, first of all, they believe in the clash, and they want to provoke a clash. And so they will commit the most outrageous acts. They're counting on the fact that what they're doing will be, you know, offensive, that people will find it absolutely abominable, and they're hoping for something that will, in fact, stoke the fires.
And why do they believe in the clash, as you say? Why do they want to bring it on?
Well, I think that, I mean, it depends on the particular individual or groups that you're dealing with. You're dealing with people that have both real grievances as well as perceived grievances. They're also people who, it ties right into the question you asked me, who play off what are very broad, popular issues in the Arab and Muslim world. But they're issues that may, on the one hand, generate among a significant proportion of the population an anti-Americanism, as in anti-American foreign policy on certain issues. Mm-hmm. They play to the hatred side of it. And therefore, they use the symbol of the Apache helicopter as the Apache helicopter that is seen being used, and this is what they're playing off, the idea that it's being seen being used both in Iraq as well as in Palestine and Israel. And they will play off Abu Ghraib. Of course, they will generate that to the nth degree, and they will denounce this as atrocities and barbarism, but they won't see the magnitude of the atrocities and barbarism that they and people like them engage in.
Steve is calling from Nashua, New Hampshire. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. Great. I would just like to make a comment, and it's regarding George Bush and his condemnations of the beheading, the most recent one and the previous one as well, and the implied condolence to the victims' families and so forth and so on. I think it's really a stark contrast with his remarks of bravado maybe some 1 year ago saying, bring him on.
Well, he's still saying America will never retreat, Steve. That sounds like bravado in the face of this kind of attack, doesn't it, to some extent?
Well, yeah, of course. It's kind of more a foreign policy by bravado. And they're coming on. And is it unreasonable to think that a terrorist / guerrilla network could, do this once or twice a month for, the indefinite future?
Steve, let us pick that up. I want to turn first to just a clip from Vice President Dick Cheney earlier today in Englewood, Colorado, in this vein. Here he was on the killing of Paul Johnson, Jr.
All Americans can be certain that President Bush's resolve in this war, America will hunt down these killers, find them one by one, and destroy them.
And when the Vice President talks about this war, this is bigger than Iraq. This is the global war on terrorism. Jessica Stern, how about it? Can these killers be hunted down one by one and destroyed to bring an end to this threat?
It reminds me of the memo written by the Secretary of Defense, or purportedly written by the Secretary of Defense, that was leaked to the press, in which he asks, can we kill and capture them as quickly as they reproduce? We're in a race with radical clerics who are in the business of creating terrorists. And I believe we're losing. In the short term, we need to capture and kill known members of al-Qaeda and the movement it has inspired. But that is not good enough because they are reproducing. And we need to be careful not to play into the hands of those radical clerics who will use everything we do against us.
So one way to respond is to be tough and to arrest and to track down John Esposito. On the broader front, though, what's your prescription? What's the way to pull back from this awful precipice we appear to be at, the Saudis appear to be at?
Well, you're asking me to solve all the problems of the world at this particular point. I would say, on the one hand, clearly that the Saudis have to do what they have been doing, particularly most recently, and that is very aggressively moving against these folks and to contain them. I think part of the problem, though, that the Saudis face and that the outside world wonders about is the magnitude of the problem within the kingdom. And the challenge to the Saudis will not only be on the military front, it will also be on the front of whether or not the House of Saud is going to step up to the plate when it comes to the kinds of reforms that need to be made. There have been, some encouraging signs more recently, but I think that's still an open question. I think on the other front, in terms of the U.S.-led war, I think that it is going to be very important how the reconstruction of Iraq, the reconstruction in Afghanistan turn out, and how the Bush administration, having said that it is making the Palestine-Israel issue also, a major part of its agenda, as well as democratization in the Arab world, how the Bush administration chooses to proceed. It's going to have to be willing to back up what is often fine-sounding rhetoric that many of us would support with making some of the really hard kinds of decisions and choices. And regrettably, the track record of the Bush administration in post-war Iraq, as it were, in terms of reconstruction, has not been very impressive, nor has their track record in terms of Palestine and Israel.
So it's all on the table, one awful killing and a whole universe of issues right behind it. John Esposito, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
John Esposito, director of the Center for Muslim-Christian Understanding at Georgetown University, and Jessica Stern, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Jessica Stern, author of Terror in the Name of God, Why Religious Militants Kill. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.